This is Digital Story Podcast number 816, November 9th, 2021. Today's theme is, Can Electric Vehicles Cut It for Photo Road Trips? I'm Derek Story. Those of you who have been following the story about my transition from the VW Vanagon, circa 1990, to the EV ID4 for our official workshop transport, this is the week where the rubber hits the road. Is it too early to switch from ICE to EV? Tune into this week's TDS podcast to find out. I hope you enjoy the show. Okay, first things first, let's get a couple acronyms out of the way. ICE now no longer stands for frozen watery substance. It stands for internal combustion engine. So when I use ICE in this podcast, I'm talking about my Audi A3, for example, which is the other car that I have. And it's the one I'm going to be making the comparison to for this trip, because the Vanagon is sold, as you know, the 1990 Vanagon. It has been retired for a bit as our workshop vehicle. It was a beloved workshop vehicle, but of course, near the end of its tenure, it became a little less reliable. And one thing you do not want on a workshop in the middle of nowhere is an unreliable vehicle. It's just not a good thing. So I've been using the Audi A3 to get back and forth to the workshops. However, it just doesn't have the capacity of the Vanagon, right? It's too small. I mean, it's great for me. It's great for me and somebody else. Not so good for a bunch of gear, not so good for transporting a bunch of food and stuff up to a workshop, and not so good for hauling people around during the workshop. So I knew I needed to get something bigger. And the original idea was to hold out for the electric Volkswagen bus. It's called the Buzz. However, we're probably not going to see that until 2023. And who knows, by the time you can actually get your hands on it, maybe 2024. So that was just too long for me to wait. I needed to do something. So we went for the ID4, which is a nice compromise. It's a SUV. I can seat a total of 5 passengers in there. It has lots of room. I'm going to go into all that sort of stuff. And it has a ton of cargo space in the back. So it was a nice compromise between the Audi A3 and the full-on bus of the VW Buzz. And that's where we are right now. And also, if you've been listening, you know that I have been testing the ID4, and in fact, just returned from a 9-hour road trip to Southern California, 9 hours each way, and it performed really well. So I feel like I'm ready. But this workshop is going to be even more challenging than anything I have done to this point. Here's why. We're going to get into it right now. All right, so let's get into some of the details, because in 2022, you may end up inside this VW on one of our events, right? It's very, very likely that some of you will be there. And we have some TDS members in Florence. You're probably listening. And guess what? You'll probably be in there this week. So here we go. So it's 561 miles from Santa Rosa, California to Florence, Oregon. And that's the location for our headquarters for the Oregon Coast Photography Workshop, which begins Tuesday morning. So depending on when you're listening to this, it has already begun. Or if you're listening to it first thing Tuesday morning, we're just getting ready to start the workshop. Now, adding in travel to the destinations during the workshop itself, total mileage for this week will be more than 1,300 miles. Now, in the Audi A3, that would work out to be about 54 gallons of gas. And that car requires premium, which is, you know, both a blessing and a downside. It's a blessing in performance, a downside at the pump. And right now, premium is over $5 a gallon in California, all throughout California. So the bill for fuel alone would be at least $270 in the Audi A3, and probably more if I had to fill up in remote locations where the prices go up substantially. Switching to the ID4, using my free account with Electrify America, because I have 3 years of free charging with Electrify America, I'll be using that for the long hauls for sure. So when I'm going up and down the interstates, then I'm going to be using Electrify America, and I already have that route plotted out. I only have to top off in Florence, which I can do at the electrical power station there. The electrical power station in Florence has something like 8 EV charging stations, and it's only $4 a session because it's a public utility. So that's kind of cool. So I'll be topping off in Florence. So once I get there, that'll be really the only charge I'll have, and that'll probably be around $12. So $12 for my fuel bill compared to the Audi, which will be about $270 if I take that. And that's for less capacity, right? Less cargo space, fewer people in the car, all that kind of stuff. It's fun to drive, but I don't really get to drive the way that I want when I have, you know, workshop participants in the car. So the big question is, with the VW, is it a reasonable choice for this trip? And if so, how long will it take? Well, let's go back to the Audi for a second, and let's address how long will it take. So going back to the Audi and gas, the estimated driving time, I did this on Google Maps, the estimated driving time for the trip would be 9 hours if I just got in the car and drove, 9 hours from door to door. And then usually on that length of trip, I'll have in a ICE vehicle, I'll have about 30 minute stops to get gas, stretch the legs, go to the bathroom, all that kind of stuff. So that would be about a total of 10 hours if everything went as planned in the Audi. ID4, and I have some experience with this now because of the Southern California trip. So I would add about 15% extra time for covering, you know, the same distance. So yeah, 15% would add on. So it'd take me 15% longer to get to wherever I'm going. So for example, if it's going to be 10 hours in the Audi, then I would figure it's going to be about 11 and a half in the ID4. And that's because the charging sessions are a bit longer. They're about 35 minutes. And I have one more stop. So I'll have 3 stops instead of 2 stops. I can get there in 2 stops in the Audi, but it'll be 3 stops in the ID4. So let's just round it up and say 12 hours in the VW compared to 10 hours in the ICE vehicle. So I'm not too worried about that. Now, in terms of the actual commute itself, it's going to be far more comfortable in the VW. I can tell you that already from my previous trips. It has semi-automatic driving, which is just really great on long hauls. In other words, it controls the speed. If a car pulls in front of you, it brakes, it does, you know, has travel assist. We call it travel assist. And it's a semi-automatic driving. It takes care of all that stuff, keeps you in the lane. If you get too, it centers you in the lane automatically. All I really have to do is keep a hand on the steering wheel, and it will take care of all of that. Seats are super comfortable, tons of headroom and legroom, and even has a seat massager, which is really nice for both people in the front seat. So I like that part a lot. So in terms of comfort, even though I'm spending more time in the car, it is far more comfortable journey. I think the next thing I want to do is, on the trip, I've recorded a few stops along the way. I'm not going to tell you how this turns out yet. Recorded a few stops along the way. Let's tune in. I'm going to drop in a stop right here. Let's tune in to a charging stop at Electrify America. We'll do a little remote reporting right here. Okay, here we go. I'm here at an Electrify America charging station, and I have just plugged in. And it's charging. Now, the way I like to initiate these sessions is that I use the Electrify America app on my phone via CarPlay. So I set up everything in the car on the touch screen of the car. And then it just says, go plug in. And then I just go plug in and off it goes. And one of the reasons why I like this app is that when you come to a station, in this case, we have, about 8 units here. Sometimes some of them are unavailable. You know, so if you go and park and set everything up and then it doesn't work, you go, well, what the heck's going on? Whereas with the app, when I use it in the car, I check the available stations first. And then I only drive and set up a charging station at one that says it's going to work. And when I do that, it always works. So I've had very good luck with that. By the way, these things are pretty interesting sounding. I'm going to go outside. I'm in the car right now, but I'm going to go outside. So you hear some freeway noise, but I want you to hear this thing, you know, the whirl of the charging station. It's kind of otherworldly here. So here we go. I'm going to come outside. I'm standing next to the charging station right now. And we're going about 72 kilowatts per hour. So that's decent. Whenever I can get 70 or above, I'm usually pretty happy with that. And I'm going to go from about 30% to about 85% in 30 minutes at this rate. So that'll give me time to stretch my legs for a minute. I'm going to go get something to drink, a cup of coffee. Probably going to use the restroom while I'm at it, take advantage of this. And then by the time I come back, I should be able to wrap up. And when I wrap up, all I have to do is just, it'll stop automatically because I set the limit on the app. So it'll stop automatically and I just come and unplug and then drive away. There's nothing else to it. One thing about these that's interesting is that once you reach capacity, once it stops charging, it starts a timer. You have 10 minutes to come and unplug your car. So if you're like shopping or doing something, you have 10 minutes to come and unplug your car. If you exceed that 10-minute mark, then there's a charge for that. And basically, I'm totally in favor of this because we don't want people just like parking their cars here, taking up a charging space and not charging when someone else wants to charge. And now, right now, because there's not that many electric vehicles on the road, even in California here, still, at some point, there's going to be a lot more. And we need people to get in, charge, and get out, move along. So I like this approach. I think it's good. And, you know, I get a message on my watch. I get a message on my phone, you know, an alert when the charging session's over. And it lets me know that you got 10 minutes to get over there. So it's really not a problem. It's not like we don't know this is going to happen kind of thing. But, you know, these are a lot of the little things that if you haven't used an electric vehicle, you know, little things that you learn along the way about the whole procedure. So at any rate, I'm going to be done here in 25 minutes. So I got to go to the bathroom and get something to drink. I'll be back. Then I'll just unplug and hit the road and off to our next stop. There I am at a charging station. Okay. Now, I will tell you that I did make it to Florence. Okay. So that's definitely the good news. So what about once I'm there? How about using this vehicle as a transport during the workshop? So I'm going to give you some numbers here because this part's pretty cool. And then next week, I'll add in some comments from workshop participants. I'll record some comments. But right now, let me just give you some numbers. We haven't actually gone on a field trip yet because you know, the workshop's just getting ready to start. On paper, I'm looking at 30 cubic feet of storage in the back area, you know, in the trunk or the boot, depending on, you know, what part of the world you're from. So I can store 30 cubic feet of stuff, which was great, bringing food and gear up to the workshop site itself. And I can seat 5 passengers, 3 in the back, which is a lot easier because there's no hump. You know, there's no hump. So the floor in the back, which is really nice, is completely flat because there's no drivetrain or anything, you know, running down the middle there. So there's no hump. So 5 passengers total. I'm going to try to keep it to 4 passengers on the workshop, so I have a little bit more space in the cabin itself. We're going to wear masks inside the cabin because, you know, even with everyone being vaccinated, we still want to keep everyone healthy. We're going to keep as much fresh air in, but if it's raining, then I'm going to have to use the I'm going to have to bring in fresh air via the air conditioning system. And I want to keep masks on, folks. So if I can keep it to 4 in the cabin, that'll be great. But it can take up to 5 and have everyone's gear in the back. So that part's really nice. There are dual charging ports in the back as well as in the front. So I have 4 USB-C outlets so people can recharge stuff while we're driving around. I have side door storage for everyone. Plus, I have dual pockets on the backs of the front seats. So those in the back seat, not only do they have storage in the side door, quite a bit of storage in the side door, they also have storage on the back of the seats in front of them. Very much like if you're on an airplane. It's very much like that, except with the addition of a cute little pocket dedicated to your phone that you can put there. Just don't forget it. I have 38 inches of legroom in the back and also about 38 inches of headroom in the back, and there's more of both in the front, but it's plenty roomy. I could sit in the back of my own car at 6'7" if I weren't driving it, okay? So that part is really nice too. And again, this is the sort of stuff I really run into the challenge with the other smaller car. I just, even if I get people in there, they're not going to be very comfortable for very long. And finally, I have the full-length panorama glass roof on top. So again, for photographers, really nice, because especially if you're in the back seat and you don't have to worry about the road or anything, you can just see what's going on. You can, and I really like it when I'm driving through redwood groves and stuff like that. It's really pretty. I would like to have someone else drive the car sometime so I can actually just sit back and watch. But passengers can sit back and watch because of that full-length panorama glass roof. And it has a sunshade. So if we do get bright sun or whatever, I can close the sunshade to keep everyone comfortable. So I think it's going to be a really comfortable ride for the workshop participants once they're there in the car and driving around with me. It definitely has no problem making it up from, you know, this 12-hour trip from Northern California and up into Oregon. The biggest thing I will tell you, there are two things. You have to do a bit more planning, even though you do have real-time information about fueling stations along the way. I use the Electrify America app and CarPlay. So that's, I can just say, hey, okay, show me the closest ones and it'll do that. And then it'll even show you how many charging stations, and it'll show you which ones are available. I mean, all that stuff is really nice. So I do have all that, but I still plan the trip out so I can have as few stops as possible. And I would say that the biggest drawback is the extra time to get from point A to point B on a longer trip. Other than that, I have to say all the pluses go in the other direction. In terms of comfort, in terms of cost, in terms of just fun, you know, having all this modern technology, it's leaning very much toward the EV. I hope in 2022, some of you get to come out and join me for one of our physical workshops. I'm going to be reworking the workshop lineup for 2022 when I get back from Oregon. Hope you come out and join me and get to ride around in this thing. It's a blast. The Olympus OM system, that's what it's called now, a digital ED 20mm f1.4 Pro lens was announced. Alrighty. They just announced it for $799 and is due to be released in December. Now, this is really the first product released by OM System, which is formerly known as Olympus only, but now it's OM System. They're working on a camera. I'm hoping that we'll hear about the camera before the end of the year. In fact, I'm going to talk more about that in the next spot. We're going to talk about the lens right now. So here's the deal on this new lens that was just announced. It's a 40mm. That's the 35mm equivalent. So even though it's a 20mm lens, it's for micro four thirds, which means it's a 40mm, 35mm equivalent. Aperture range of f1.4 to f16. 11 elements in 10 groups. It has one super ED, three ED, and two super HR elements, two aspherical elements, zero extra low reflection coating, which also makes it very easy to clean on the front lens, movie and still compatible AF system, weather sealed construction, which is a biggie, rounded 9-blade diaphragm. And that is important because they're really saying that the design of this lens produces lovely background bokeh. So that 9-blade diaphragm, along with the design of the lens itself, contributes to that. And it includes the lens hood and a lens wrap cloth. So a little different than the pouch. Now you get a lens wrap cloth. So this is a sharp-looking lens, and the thing that really has going for it is, in my opinion, the weather resistance. Now, I have the Panasonic 20mm f1.7. You probably remember I've talked about that lens many times, and I love it. I love it. It's a great lens, but it's not weather resistant. It's not weather resistant. So here with the f1.4, I get a little extra light gathering ability, and I get weather resistance. And I would really like that. Now, the other thing that my Panasonic doesn't have is a hard stop infinity. You know, the focusing ring just kind of, you know, just goes around and around, that kind of thing. And even though you can manual focus with it nicely, it's not what I want, especially if I'm going to do something like night photography or something where I want a hard stop infinity or I want a focusing scale. And I think that is the feature they missed here. I can't believe they did not include their wonderful snap focus ability. Now, I have snap focus on my 17mm lens and on a couple of my pro lenses, and I absolutely love it. And basically, you pull back the manual focusing thing, and it snaps into a different gear. You're still in manual focus, but now you have hard stop at infinity, and you have all the distance markings and all the cool stuff, just like a traditional lens. This lens would have been perfect for that, and they didn't put it on there. So that kind of makes me nuts a little bit, because if truly they want me to move from my Panasonic f1.7, you know, they need to give me more than just weather resistance for that and what they're calling really great bokeh and a little faster aperture. They need to give me one other thing, and that thing would have been snap focus. So I'm a little bummed about that, but I will say that if you don't already own the Panasonic 20mm f1.7, I would seriously look at this lens. I would look at this lens if I didn't have the Panasonic f1.7, believe me. But since I do, I think I'm probably going to stand pat for the moment. I know a lot of folks on our Facebook page were talking about they would love to have a little wider lens, right? So why the 20mm? Why not the 12mm? Right? Do a 12mm f1.4 or some other focal length, but maybe something a little wider than the 20. Anyway, it's good to see that they're still cranking out excellent looking gear, and I cannot wait for the camera. That's what I really want, the camera. Why I'm not packing Olympus in Oregon. So this was funny. Last week when I did the show about how I'm preparing for inclement weather, and I talked about my camera gear, I'm bringing the Fujifilm X100V, and I'm bringing my Pentax KP. Both of them are excellent all-weather cameras. And folks are going, well, what about your Olympus gear, which is also excellent all-weather? And indeed it is. Indeed it is. I have shot with Olympus gear in some really crazy conditions, and it has held up well. That's not why I'm not bringing it. So when you do what I do, and you're reviewing cameras, and you're testing cameras, and you're writing about what's going on, I tend to want to work with the latest gear most of the time, which means is I have to let older gear go as I anticipate new stuff is going to be released. So on my Olympus gear, still have my Pen-F, still have my EM10 Mark III, still have lots of fantastic lenses, still have my EM5 Mark II. You know, these are all great cameras, but they're not state-of-the-art, and none of those are weather-resistant. So I have let go of my EM1s. I've sold them in anticipation that the EM1 Mark IV would be out by now, because it's been, like, forever since the EM1 Mark III came out, and even longer since the EM1X came out. I let go of that gear to get other gear that I needed in the moment, especially during the pandemic when I wasn't able to get out much, thinking, okay, the EM1-4 will be here like by the time I go to Oregon and start physical workshops again. Guess what? It's not here. and we don't even actually know when. So I am a man without a camera when it comes to OM system at the moment, even though I use my Pen-F almost every day. I love that camera, and I use it a lot, but I can't take it on a workshop where it's going to rain every day because it will die, and I don't want it to die because I love it. So I am a man without a camera right now, and that's why I'm going with the Pentax and the Fujifilm on this workshop, because both of them are more state-of-the-art and definitely weather resistant. And the lenses I have for them are weather resistant as well. So that is why. And believe me, I have not lost faith in OM System at all, but I am definitely in between their flagship cameras. Okay, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members, the folks that support us month in and month out, not only with their donations, but also with their time, their opinions, and really moral support as well. I mean, I just sent a note out to Inner Circle members on Saturday and just kind of recapping and what's going to happen next and all that stuff, a little State of the Union note. And I just, you know, remarked in that note how we have survived so many things as a community, you know, pandemic and climate change and all the craziness that's going on. And we have actually moved the ball forward. You know, we have moved the ball forward. And I was just thinking the other day, not only all of that, but even personally, I did not gain weight during the pandemic. I actually lost 12 pounds during the pandemic. I worked on that as well. So I'm saying, okay, bring it on. We're going to innovate our way out of whatever these challenges are. Our community's doing it, and that's just my personal philosophy as well. If you're interested in becoming a part of this wonderful group of artists, then all you have to do is go to the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Click on it, it'll take you over to our site, see what's going on, and hopefully you will support us. We have some new members. Welcome aboard, and thank you so much, Inner Circle members, for believing in this community. And finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper, longest-running sponsor of the Digital Story. And believe me, when I get back from Oregon, I'm hoping to make some prints on Red River Paper, make some lovely stuff possibly for the holidays. I think it's going to have a good vibe, right? I'm anticipating some, I don't want to say wintry images, but you know what I mean, the Oregon coast images. And then we're also going to go inland a bit. And I thought, wow, wouldn't that be great for fine art greeting cards and for, you know, seasonal gifts using Red River Paper. So I'm going to be chomping at the bit to do some printing when I get back. It's all going to be on Red River Paper. If you're interested in producing some great stuff yourself, just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over to our landing page at Red River, nose around, stock up now, get your supplies in order now. Then that way, when it's time to start producing stuff for gifts during the holidays, you'll have everything you need. And while everything else is stuck on a cargo ship out, you know, off the coast of California or Texas or New York or wherever it is, you will be printing gifts that people truly appreciate, because you'll have your Red River Paper stacked up at home next to your inkjet printer, all fired up and ready to go. They also have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And again, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. It's time for workshop stuff. I'm ready to go. Hope you are too. Come back and join me next week. I'm going to have some comments from workshop participants. Until then, have a great week. Stay creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.